There's no reason why that couldn't be your story.
You don't have an expiration date.
Oh, I love that. This is the Authors and Agents Podcast.
Elsie, I'm super excited to have you here with me today. I am a huge fan. I was one of those who fell into a TikTok video that a reader made of For Heartless, and I picked up the book in Kindle Unlimited, read it once in a single day, read it again, because I was just like, these are amazing. I wasn't really a big romance reader before, but have since read the rest of, you know, your two series, and now you've got another series coming out, Rose Hill, yeah. And the first one is Wild Love. So that comes out April 9th. Can you tell me a little bit about that one?
Yeah, so that one is... the hero is Willa's brother. So Heartless mm-hmm. from Chestnut Springs, we meet Willa. She's kind of a fan favorite in that series. So in this book, we kind of follow her brother's story. He's dropped into hopeless kind of towards the end just a little bit. But yeah, he kicks us off in Rose Hill. Kind of the heavy hitting tropes are like brother's best friend. So it's his best friend's little sister. kind of like secret pining because they are kind of childhood enemies, you know, that kind of like pigtail pulling, like teasing that you would do with an older brother's friend. So kind of like that sort of vibe. And it's single dad, but and I'm not spoiling anything by telling you guys this because I know that there's like the blurb and then some people have read the first chapter, but yeah, it's kind of a, I don't know, I think kind of a unique spin on the single dad trope because he, basically the story is that he donated sperm as like an 18-year-old. And then this 12-year-old girl comes into his life who needs a family member, basically, and she's tracked him down. And so that's kind of where it kicks off from. Yeah, and she's been a favorite of most of the people who've read it so far. So. Yeah, so it's a whole new town, a whole new vibe, same favorite trope.
I love it. And I love that twist on like the single dad trope. Like he's single dad, but like fresh starting out to a 12-year-old, right? Like that's definitely different.
And he's totally, I really love his character because he's kind of like dry and he's just kind of like unprepared, obviously. Yeah. And she's funny, and just like him kind of like learning how to be with her is really endearing. And yeah, there's some kind of some funny bits in there with them too. So
My goodness,
I'm excited.
I am so excited. I know the world is excited for it. So you have a unique story to this point, your journey through publishing. So tell me a little bit about how this happened, because you were indie, published on your own, and now you're represented and have your books being republished traditionally. So how has that looked for you?
Yeah, it's been an exciting year. I think I've had a slightly unconventional sort of path into the traditional or hybrid publishing world. So I was definitely finding my stride with indie publishing. I was very happy with how my career looked as an indie author, actually. Like, no, I'm still a big proponent of it, to be honest with you. I think that having that level of control and the income is really solid if you can succeed in indie publishing. So it's a good place to be. But the one thing that's kind of lacking for indie authors is like true good paperback distribution. Like obviously we can do Ingram and we can do Amazon and we can do direct sales, but in terms of like actually really getting into bookstores and some of those goals that maybe you have on your list for, you know, lists or events or those kind of things, or just kind of there's still a stigma, I think, with indie publishing. So yeah, there's a lot of benefits to adding in the help of a publisher. And so it's been really exciting to see my books in stores. It's not really something that I imagined for myself. It's been a a fun, exciting, busy, wild ride.
Such a wild ride. So yeah. Just a little bit behind the scenes, was it a situation where, you know, you were querying still as you were indie publishing, or were you reached out to be represented?
I was reached out to. So I was not even querying like agents. I started getting offers that I didn't feel comfortable or equipped to sign from like a legal standpoint. I was like, I don't want to sign this away and I don't totally understand what I'm signing. Yeah. So I reached out to an author who I'm close with, and she was like, let me talk to my agent. And that weekend, hilariously, like things really started for me with sort of a viral moment, and then they just kind of stayed there. So that weekend that the agent was like looking at my stuff to decide if she wanted to talk to me was the weekend I hit number one on the Amazon store, and like everything went crazy. So I think she read that first book that weekend, and then on Monday she reached out to me. And it started off with just kind of like sub rights and some contractual stuff that I needed help with. And then that momentum kind of like kept going. And then she started getting people, like, I think it was UK offers first or interest, on publishing deals for like the UK and Europe and British Commonwealth. And then from there, the US publishers kind of came around too. So, that's where I think it's probably unusual, because I wasn't really out there trying to get them the same way. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Did you ever, you know, before you published, did you try to query traditionally, or were you like indie from the go? Like, you, this is what I want to do.
I went straight to indie. I went to school for business, like college. So I felt like I had the marketing and I had the finance and knowledge or like, yeah, know-how. And I really enjoyed the idea of doing it myself. And I was a big, like, I've been an early adopter of like Kindle or like Kindle Unlimited. So for me, yeah, a lot of the authors that I've been reading and have been, you know, a fan of for the past 10 years are indie. So if I start looking around at what they're doing, it just seemed like kind of an obvious path. I mean, of course, I wasn't planning. I kind of just was like, oh, I'll publish a book and see what happens. Like I didn't have my sights set on where I am now when I first hit publish on my debut. So
But look at where you are now. And
I know.
What a journey
story for sure. Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Well, I've loved experiencing all your books and watching, your books get republished, and just the new readers who, you know, will get to experience it all for the first time, I'm sure is really exciting from your perspective.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So speaking of wild love, what is something you hope readers will take away from this story?
Something I hope they'll take away from this story. I think one of the things that I really enjoyed writing that I haven't necessarily put in a book yet is obviously the hero and the heroine start their relationship, but there's also a period of her ending a relationship. And it's like one of those like early first relationships that you kind of wake up one day and it's like, I don't know if I like this person, you know, like it's like you got busy, you went to school, they became part of your schedule and your friend group. And then all of a sudden, you know, so I think it's just like, it's a story of recreating yourself. Like he really recreates himself, she really recreates herself. There's just something I think really inspiring and like invigorating about that they, you know, find themselves in the same place at the same time, wanting the same thing. And that they were both brave enough to kind of take that step into what for both of them is kind of unknown and like a new kind of lease on life or a new story that they start. I hope that people feel inspired by that, or yeah. And of course there's like the found family vibes, and I like love those too.
Oh yes, those are the best.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I like love this book so much. You don't love every single book the same way. I feel like, I mean, I love them all for different reasons, but every now and then you finish one and you're like, I just love this book. Like, I'm excited to listen to the audio. Like, I don't know. I had so much fun writing it. So, I think mostly I just hope that people love it as much as I do.
I have no doubt that they will love it as much as you do. And I think that, you know, I can remember being in a relationship like that, where you wake up and you're like, what did I do? How did I get here? And so maybe this book will be that for somebody, right?
And I think that also, like, one of the things is, like, there's not always something hugely wrong with the other person. Like, he's not an awful person. They're just not jiving, you know? And that's okay. Like, I think it's okay to be, like, mature about it. And, you know, you don't have to stay in a relationship that's not serving you anymore.
Definitely. So,
yeah.
Maybe someone will really need to read this, and through all of the wonderful romance and everything else that comes with it, they'll be like, okay, yeah, maybe I need to do that too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
So when you read, you know, for your own enjoyment, who are some of your favorite authors to read, and why do you love them?
Oh, I know it's so hard to pick, right? But I find that I read less and less contemporary romance, just because it often feels like work, or like small town, like just straight contemporary feels a little, just a little too close to probably what I'm actually working on. I don't get that escapism feeling that I like. But if I'm going to read contemporary, it's going to be Elizabeth O'Rourke every time. I love her books and I love her writing. And I love her as a human, her Facebook group. She's so funny. I just like, I love her. But A Deal with the Devil is like the first book in her Devil series. And it's witty, and it's, you know, the characters aren't perfect. I think that's what I love in a book, is characters who aren't just perfect people making perfect choices all the time. And so, yeah, her books I love. I recently read Gothicana by Runix, and it was just re-released, and I loved that. It's like dark gothic academia. Again, there's like kind of parts of the story that are left to your imagination. It's not tied up in like the perfect neat little bow, and I love that. I don't know. I read a lot of fantasy. What else have I bought lately? I'm looking at my shelf here. Yeah, I read a lot of fantasy.
A good escape from, you know, the contemporary feels that you write a lot.
It is. Yeah. Like I did, I love Laura Thalassa's series. She's got like the Four Horsemen series that I love, and then the Rhapsodic series. It feels like, I also worry that sometimes I'm going to read a book and I'll love some part of it, and I'll stock it away in some part of my brain, and it's going to fall to the page one day, and I won't even realize what I've done. Whereas I feel like if they've got wings or something, I'm not going to, that's not going to happen. It's like safe, you know?
Yes. Yes. With wings, so, that keeps you safe from,
there will be no wings in my small towns. surprise. No.
That would be strange. No.
So, I'm loving those. And then if I do like paranormal romance, another series I loved recently was, I don't know if it's Stasia or Stasia Stark. There's like a kind of a demon series that leads into like a werewolf series. But those are like, you're with that couple for like five books or something. Okay. So you kind of have to invest in it, but they're not like, I don't think they're like 600 page books either. So you can kind of whip through them, but yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing those. It's always good, you know, to spread the love and
absolutely.
There are people who don't know about any of those and they're going to add them to their list now.
Good. I hope so.
So thinking back to younger Elsie, who is writing, wanting to indie publish, or, you know, let's say indie publish, what advice would you share looking back with, you know, your younger self?
I would, going back to like those first couple books that, and I mean, I know that for me, success has come quickly because it was kind of like this huge jump. But even before then, like it's a marathon, I think, like building a career in this, you know, if you take blowing up or going viral or whatever out of the picture, I was very happy with, I was able to be writing full-time and making a full-time salary before this even happened. So I think that like consistency, especially with indie publishing, is like, you're probably not going to blow up with one book. And even if you are, you probably don't want to be honest, you probably don't want your debut to be the one that like really blows up, because it comes with so much criticism too. Right. So it's like every book is just like a building block, and then every release, you know, you see those backlist books bump up and you're just constantly building this sort of boat that floats along. And yes, sometimes the tide is higher and sometimes it's lower, but even a book that feels like it wasn't met with much anticipation or acclaim or money even, is just at the very beginning of its life cycle. So I think when you're first starting, it can feel very black or white or do or die, and you start playing the comparison game. But the fact of the matter is, if like you're creating and writing, you know, the best quality book you can, and of course they're going to continue to get better. Nobody's first book is going to be their best book. I mean, that would just be depressing, right? Then you would just quit.
That would.
So I always just think like, just keep building it, and you just know that it's like, you know, those building blocks till you get to a point where you're just all of a sudden, all of that stuff is working together. Cause I think it's easy to get discouraged and feel like it's not going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's easy when you compare your day one to somebody else's day 1000, right? And that's absolutely so easy to do when you can't see all the behind the scenes or, you know, understand what everybody else has put into what they're doing. But I think that's great advice because the way our world works, we think everything happens just like this, and you can get stuff just like this, right?
Absolutely.
This is the business of it. Takes a long time.
Absolutely. And I think that it was another author who said to me like basically that, you know, I was an example of like making sure that you're like the building blocks that you're creating are the best quality that they can be, because when lightning does strike, you've got this huge backlist there for people to be like, oh my God, this is the same Elsie Silver goodness that I always wanted. And I'm finding that now with Chestnut Springs Complete. I feel like people didn't really want to go back and read the first series until Chestnut Springs was done. But now so many people are going back. And that first 4-book series, I'll be the first to admit that like every book I feel like gets a little bit better. But they go back and they're like, oh, this is still feels like Elsie Silver. Like it's still like the spice is there, or the found family is there, or it still scratches that itch that they want. And when I was first writing, probably wasn't until the third book that I was like, oh, okay, now I see some benefit. Like the first book, I think I was like, what have I done? I think I lost money on this. Like it was just, but yeah, so it's kind of interesting about with those sitting there, you know, air quotes, it's like that they're, it's like ready for consumption sort of thing. Yeah,
definitely. Well, that is definitely good advice for those starting authors. And that, you know, goes for indie as, you know, definitely, but also traditional authors, you know,
of course.
It's a marathon still in that field as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So my next question is a two-parter. What is the most enjoyable thing about writing for you? And then what's the most challenging thing?
The most enjoyable thing. I think that I spend a lot of time in my head. Like I'm not a huge plotter. I say that I'm not a huge plotter, and yet I feel like I have the entire book plotted in my head. Like, I don't truly have no idea where I'm going. I have scenes written down or whatever. But when I really get to that point in a book where I feel like I know the characters so well that I know exactly what they do or say in every situation, or I spend, you know, I'm falling asleep and I try and like walk myself through another scene. That for me is like so enjoyable, coming up with different scenarios to put them in. And I love doing, honestly, this, some people don't, but I love doing edits. Like the hardest part for me is the drafting sometimes, like forcing myself to sit down and get that first draft of the story down is sometimes feels like pulling teeth because I already know it in my head. And I'm like, now I have to, yes. Why can't I just like brain project exactly. It onto my computer, right? It's like the kind of the grindy part of it. But I love editing. I love when the book is done and I know I can go back in and it's like, well, anything can be fixed now because the story is there and I can add a scene, or I often go through and it's like, you know, I'll add little, like a touch here or this little sort of, I don't know, piece of candy in a scene. And I like going and doing edits, or not full rewrites, but I do like kind of beefing the story up with pieces that I think give it that extra added richness. Those are, and then I love doing like stuff that feels totally different, like working with my cover designer or working with my audio producer. Cause those still feel creative and like I'm working, but I'm not actually doing the work in the same way. Right.
Yeah. Yes. You're helping to direct the work, but you're not having to sit there.
It's still creative.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah. No, I agree with you. When you've got that all plotted out in your head, to actually, I wish I just had something where I could connect it to my brain, to the computer, and it would just type it all out for me. Because
like if I could visualize it, like if it was like, brain cam, I don't know what else you would call it, but they play like a movie in my head, my books, as I'm writing or as I'm reading. And I know that not everybody has that, but I wish that I could just like movie it from like my brain onto the page, but.
Maybe someday we'll get there.
Maybe I know that's somebody tell like Elon Musk or some new technology.
That's what we want. So if you were to ever genre hop writing something, you know, different from what you do, what would you like to most try writing?
I always say like something more like forbidden, but I kind of drop those into my stories already with like age gap or brother's best friend or, you know, workplace agent athlete kind of thing. So I love that. But I, in the last couple of years, have become really good friends with Catherine Cowles, and she writes romantic suspense. And I often read her books actually in terms of contemporary, because I love the, I'm like, it's like the whodunit sort of vibe of her books, where I'm like, you're like guessing who it is. And sometimes I'm like, oh, that would be kind of fun. Like there's still a romance storyline, of course, that's heavier on the romance, but I could see that being kind of fun for something totally different. I wish that I could write a fantasy book, but I don't think that I could. Like, I think coming up with that storyline, like, or I just think of fantastical, you know, beasts or magic or words for it even. So maybe that's why I like reading it. But I could see myself doing like a suspense or doing more like sports stuff. But I like that about small town. I feel like I can write almost anything in a small town, really.
I was going to say, you could do a great romantic suspense in a small town with.
Totally. Yeah, absolutely.
Depending on how you set it up. Well, maybe someday. I will say I love to read fantasy, and I think the authors who write it are incredible, but I think I would get lost and be like, I'd have to have like charts and notes, and
I'm not organized all of that enough
because I would get lost in the vocabulary and everything about it.
I know. I'd need like a glossary as I go.
Yes.
And my process is a little more chaotic than that. So.
Yes, me too.
Yeah.
But I applaud the writers who are able to keep all that straight and write wonderful fantasies for us.
They're doing good work out there. Yeah.
They are indeed. Elsie, who has been the biggest supporter of your writing throughout your journey?
Like just in life or in like the business?
In life.
In life. Definitely my husband. He has kind of seen me through from the very beginning, and he knows now, like, I'm like, if I'm at a certain point and I'm like, I don't want to write, like, I hate this book. He's like, oh, let me guess, you're at 80%. And I'm like, oh God, am I that predictable? Like, or I'll start a book and I hate beginnings. The first 20,000 words are really hard for me. And I'm like, I don't know, it doesn't make sense. And like, nobody's going to like it. And I get into this like headspace until I get the story like really kind of flowing. Yeah. And he'll be like, don't talk to me until you hit 20,000 words. Like, just keep going. So he knows, and he knows like if I'm on a deadline, that I might need to get left alone for a weekend. So he's hugely supportive. Not only like, and he talks out plot with me, but like he'll bring me a coffee or anything that he can do to kind of facilitate a good writing space for me, he does, which is amazing. So we also have a child, so sometimes, and three dogs, so sometimes the house feels kind of chaotic, but he's been hugely supportive. My parents don't live near me, but they are like my biggest cheerleaders always. And then I'm really lucky. I've had some like incredible authors that have been, you know, like mentors to me along the way, that I've been super lucky to have. So, yeah.
I love it. I think you've got, you know, the biggest supporters in a bunch of different ways, right? Which we all need. We all need, you know, the ones at home who are there helping to facilitate.
Yeah, on the ground. Time.
On the ground, they're in the trenches with us.
Yeah, exactly.
But then, yeah, the ones from afar and the ones who are also doing the writing, who can understand.
Yeah. And sharing that wisdom and that knowledge and, you know, just being really generous with their time. Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah. Very huge. I do have a question about your parents. Do you censor the books for them, or do they just like, do they just read them?
They just read them. My mom isn't a big romance reader. So she like, well, I don't know how many she's read. I think she's read the Chestnut Springs series. And then my dad was like, I'm going to read one. And I was like, Oh, okay. Like, all right. And we're all pretty close. Like I'm not cringing over it. I've kind of decided to just own the spice in my books at this point.
You should.
But he texted me the one day and he was like, well, I got far enough to know that you're a good writer. And that I'm very proud of you, but that I don't want to read any further. And I was like, perfect. I'm glad that you policed yourself on this one. So, so that's kind of, but my mother-in-law reads every single one like on release day, but she's a romance reader. So
yeah. Oh, well, I love that your dad was like so supportive. He wanted to give it a good old college try.
Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. That is so sweet. So yeah. it sounds like coffee is really crucial to your writing process. Is there anything else like snack, drink wise that you have to have to really, you know, on your weekends, maybe that you're really heavy into drafting or editing?
I am definitely, reliant on coffee. I have figured out, well, I've always written best first thing in the morning. And so I try to stick to that. Usually if I can get up at like 5, I can get a good hour and a half of uninterrupted writing time. And if I can go straight into my manuscript and not pick up social media, that is like a game changer for my productivity. If I start scrolling, I feel like my focus is just shot. And it's really hard to get back into it. So it's motivating to me to be like, okay, get up, get the words in, and then I can do whatever I want and go to bed at like 8:30 or something embarrassing like that.
That is not embarrassing. I would love to go to bed at 8:30 every single night.
So I definitely have a coffee, lots of warm drinks, especially right now because it's like winter in Canada. I live on the West Coast, so it's very rainy and damp. So even if it's like hot lemon water, I try not to have too much coffee or I just get like jittery. Tea, coffee, water is kind of like my go-to. I don't usually eat when I write. I actually, this sounds funny maybe, but I feel like I write better when I'm hungry a little bit, or I'm more like, I'm like, okay, like food is like the reward maybe.
There you go. Hey,
I get kind of sleepy after I eat. So I'm not a big breakfast gal. So usually if I can push through till, you know, like 10 o'clock, then I'll have some yogurt or something. So I'm hydrated, but yeah, I do that. And my headphones, I am a big proponent of Brain FM. It's like an app. Oh. That has ambient music with different like brainwave frequencies set for different tasks. So there's like deep work and there's creativity and there's study and read and there's meditation. So there's all these different ones. So I have a monthly subscription to that. And usually I have it on like deep work when I'm writing and then study and read when I'm editing. But I play it for my kids sometimes too, and it's good. I don't know. It's, there's something, it's very vibey. Like it's not, I can't listen to words while I write. It's like too many words. Yeah.
I will have to try that. Cause I used to be able to listen and always had like a TV show playing. Usually The Office was my favorite, you know, like in the background. Yeah. We did that like just random noise, but now lately it has to be nothing with words. So I sit in silence most of the time, but maybe some ambient music would be really nice.
Yeah. Well, I think you can do a trial with that app. So you could try it. I have a friend that writes with white noise.
Yeah.
She's like, so just hides out in her headphones and there's like nothing but white noise. So
We do love white noise. We listen to my baby has a little white noise machine. So I get a lot of white noise.
My son's almost eight and he still sleeps with his. Like he turns it on himself every night now. So
We are big proponents of white noise in our house. It's very helpful.
It is. Well, for sure.
I have just one last question for you.
Okay.
It sounds hard, but it's really not. I'd love to know what your favorite book is right now. Not favorite book of all time, but maybe just something you've read recently that you are excited to tell people about.
Yeah. I am still kind of on a high about Gothicana by Runix. I loved it. I am currently reading An Arc of Dishonestly Yours by Krista and Becca Ritchie, and it's not out for a bit, so I feel like I can't say too much, but it is so good and so fresh and unique. I'm loving it. And then I put it in my newsletter recently, actually. It's a trilogy by Olivia Wildenstein, and it's The Angels of Elysium, and it's like a angels fantasy kind of like fallen, that there's like fallen angels and these, I don't know, it's a really, really unique world that she built. And I binged those. So those are kind of the ones that are at the forefront of my mind right now as being really exciting.
Yeah. Ooh, I love it. I love it. Those are great. I love series like that, you know, maybe we're technically late to the game on, but then now we just get to binge them all and we don't have to wait in between for them to be released. That's perfect.
I know, right? Yeah. That's the hardest part about a series.
It is. Yeah. It is indeed. Well, Elsie, I'm so excited for the new series to start, for Wild Love to come out, and, you know, more readers to continue to find you. So thank you for letting me chat with you today. And I'm looking forward to everything that's to come.
Oh, thank you so much. This was fun. Thanks for having me.